理课堂听 class.com。
Chapter 7, The Hearing of the Call. When Buck made $1,600 in 5 minutes for John Thornton, he made it possible for his master to pay back some money that he had borrowed before. He also made it possible for Thornton and his partners to make a trip into the eastern part of the Northland. According to a story heard among gold miners, a lost mine was there. Only a few people ever made it back from this area. More than a few had died trying to reach it. This lost mine was covered in mystery. No one knew of the first man to find it. It seemed like the story had been there since the beginning of time. Men swore their lives to it, holding tightly to their pieces of gold that were unlike any quality of gold in the Northland. But no living man in John Thornton's time had come back with gold from this mine. The dead were dead. Such was the way when Thornton, Pete, and Hans, with Buck and half a dozen other dogs, faced into the east on an unknown trail to achieve where men and dogs as good as themselves had failed. They rode 70 miles up the Yukon, turned to the left into the Stewart River, passed the Mayo and the McQuestion, and kept on until the Stewart became a little stream, leading into the huge mountains that marked the backbone of the continent. John Thornton asked little of a man or nature. He was unafraid of the wild. With a handful of salt and a gun, he could go into the wilderness and do whatever he pleased, for as long as he pleased. Not being in a hurry, like an Indian, he hunted for his dinner while traveling in the daytime. If he failed to find any food, like the Indian, he kept on traveling, safe in the knowledge that sooner or later he would come to it. So, on this great journey into the east, meat was the only food to be had. Guns, bullets, and mining tools made up most of the load on the sled. In this way, their time was extended into a limitless future. To Buck, it was complete happiness. This hunting, fishing, and wandering through strange places without a time limit. For weeks at a time, they would travel every day, and for weeks at a time, they would stop and camp. When they did this, the dogs would rest and play while the men would burn holes on the edge of frozen streams and rivers. Here, they would wash countless pans of dirt, hoping to find a few pieces of gold that would lead them to the famous mine in the east. Sometimes they went hungry. Sometimes they ate more than they could ever imagine. All according to nature and the luck of their hunting. Summer arrived, and dogs and men packed on their backs, rode on boats across blue mountain lakes, and went up and down unknown rivers. The months came and went, and back and forth they moved through the unmapped area, where no men were, and yet where men had been if the lost mine was true. They traveled through summer snowstorms, cold under the midnight sun, dropped into summer valleys where the insects were everywhere, and in the shadows of the mountains picked wild fruit and flowers as sweet and beautiful as any that the Southland had. In the fall of the year, they entered an area full of lakes that was sad and silent. There, they found no signs of life, only the cold winds and beginnings of ice. And through another winter, they wandered on the old trails of men that had gone before them. Once, they came upon an old path that went clear through the forest, an ancient path, and it seemed that the lost mine was very near. But the path began nowhere and ended nowhere, and it remained a mystery, as the man who made it and the reason he made it remained a mystery. Another time they came upon the remains of an old hunting camp, and among the half-rotted blankets, John Thornton found an old gun. He knew that it was a Hudson Bay Company gun of the days when the Northland was hardly explored, when such a gun was worth its weight in gold. And that was all. Nothing to tell them about the man who in earlier days had made the camp and left the gun among the blankets. Spring came and went once more, and at the end of their wanderings they found not the lost mine, but a place in a wide valley where the gold showed like yellow butter across the bottom of the river. They looked no further. Each day they worked, they earned thousands of dollars in dust and gold rocks, and they worked every day. They stored the gold in bags, 50 pounds to each bag, and it began to pile up like firewood outside the small house they had built. Like giants they worked, days coming and going like dreams as they built up their riches. There was nothing for the dogs to do except pull in the meat that John Thornton killed, and Buck spent long hours sitting in front of the fire, thinking and dreaming. The dream of the hairy man with short legs came to him more often, now that there was little work to be done. And often, looking into the fire, Buck wandered with him in that other world which he remembered. The main feeling in this other world seemed to be fear. When he watched the hairy man sleeping by the fire, head between his knees and hands held above, Buck saw that he slept restlessly, with many jumps and noises, at which time he would look fearfully into the darkness and then put more wood on the fire. Who was this hairy man? When they walked by the beach, and the hairy man gathered food and ate it as he gathered, it was with eyes that looked everywhere for hidden danger and with legs prepared to run like the wind at its first appearance. Through the forest they moved soundlessly, Buck near the man's feet, and they were alert and watchful, the pair of them, with eyes moving and noses shaking. For the man heard and smelled as well as Buck. The hairy man could jump into the trees and travel ahead as fast as on the ground. He would swing his arms from branch to branch, sometimes a dozen feet apart, letting go and catching. He never fell, never missed the next branch. In fact, he seemed as much at home among the trees as on the ground. And Buck had memories of nights spent beneath trees where the hairy man held tightly to a branch while he slept. Close-in feeling to the dream of the hairy man was the call that Buck heard that seemed to come from the depths of the forest. It filled him with a great unrest and strange wants. It caused him to feel a sweet gladness, and he was aware of wild longings and stirrings for something he did not know. Sometimes he chased after the call into the forest, looking for it as if it was a solid thing, growling softly. Or he would push his nose into the black dirt where the long grass grew and smell with joy the fat, earthy smells. Or he would lay low for hours as if trying to hide, behind fallen trees, wide-eyed, with ears ready to listen to all that moved and made noise around him. It might be that, lying in this way, he hoped to surprise this call he could not understand. But he did not know why he did these many things. He was made to do them and did not reason about them at all. Strange feelings came upon him that he could not resist. He would be lying in camp, sleeping lazily in the heat of the day, when suddenly his head would lift and his ears stand up, listening, and he would jump to his feet and run away on and on, hour after hour, through the forest and across open spaces of grass. He loved to run down dry rivers and to look at the bird life in the woods. For a day at a time, he would lie under some bushes, watching fat northern birds move up and down, showing their feathers to each other. But especially, he loved to run in the low light of the summer midnights, listening to the softened sounds of the forest, reading signs and sounds as a man might read a book, looking for that mysterious something that called, waking or sleeping at all times for him to come. One night, he all of a sudden jumped up from his sleep, looking wildly about with his nose smelling the air, his hair standing up along his back. From the forest came the call, or at least one note of the call, for the call had many notes, stronger than it ever had before. It was a long howl, the same and yet not the same as the howls made by a husky dog. And he knew it, in the old familiar way, as a sound heard before. He ran through the forest as quick as lightning and as silent as snow. As he came closer to the cry, he went more slowly, being careful in every movement, till he came to an open place among the trees. Looking out, he saw, sitting high on its legs, with nose pointed to the sky, a long, thin timber wolf. He had made no noise, but the wolf stopped its howling, trying to sense Buck's presence. Buck went into the open, moving low to the ground, body gathered tightly together, tail straight and high, feet falling with great care. Every movement showed both danger and friendliness. It was the mix of fear and peace that marks the meeting of wild animals that hunt. But the wolf ran away at the sight of Buck. He followed, with wild leaps, hoping to catch up. And Buck ran the wolf up the dry river into an area where fallen trees blocked the path. The wolf turned on its hind legs, just the way that other husky dogs did when backed into a corner, hair standing on end and teeth continuously snapping together as if ready to attack. But Buck did not attack. Instead, he circled him and moved toward him with friendly advances. The wolf was careful and afraid, for Buck was three times his size and weight, while his head barely reached Buck's shoulder. Looking for his chance, the wolf ran away, and the chase began again. Time and again he was cornered by Buck, and the scene was repeated, though the wolf was in poor condition. He would run until Buck's head was almost at his legs, when he would turn around and begin snapping his teeth again, only to run away again at the first opportunity. But in the end, Buck's efforts were rewarded, for the wolf, finding that Buck did not mean to harm him, finally sniffed noses with him. Then they became friendly and played with each other in the half-nervous, half-shy way that wild beasts show their friendliness. After some time, the wolf started off again in a slow run that plainly showed he was going somewhere. He made it clear that he wanted Buck to come, and they ran side by side through the midnight light, straight up the river, into the hills where it began, and higher, heading straight for the mountains. On the opposite side of a great hill, they came into a flat country where great areas of forest continued on, and through these forests they ran steadily, hour after hour, the sun rising higher and the day growing warmer. Buck was wildly glad. He knew he was at last answering the call, running by the side of his wood brother toward the place where the call surely came. Old memories were coming upon him fast, and he was moving to them as surely as if they were realities, not shadows of the past. He had done this thing before, somewhere in that other dark remembered world, and he was doing it now again, running freely in the open, the ground underneath and the wide sky above. They stopped by a stream to drink, and stopping, Buck remembered John Thornton. He sat down. The wolf started on toward the place from where the call surely came, and then returned to him, sniffing noses and making actions for Buck to follow him. But Buck turned around and slowly started back the way they came. For the better part of an hour, the wild brother ran by his side, crying softly. Then he sat down and, with nose pointing to the sky, howled. It was a sad howl, and as Buck held to the path back to camp, he heard it grow softer and softer until it was lost in the distance. John Thornton was eating dinner when Buck ran into camp and jumped upon him full of love, knocking him over from his chair, licking his face and biting his hand. Thornton responded by shaking him back and forth and calling him names lovingly. For 2 days and nights, Buck never left camp, never let John Thornton out of his sight. He followed him about at his work, watched him while he ate, saw him into his blankets at night and out of them again in the morning. But after 2 days he began to hear the call of the forest again, and this time it sounded with more importance. He had to obey. Buck's restlessness came back to him, and he was haunted by memories of his wild brother and of the smiling land beyond the hill where they ran side by side through forests. Once again he took to wandering among the woods. But the wild brother came no more, and though he listened day and night, the howl was never raised. He began to sleep out at night, staying away from camp for days at a time, and once he traveled over the hills and up the river until he reached that land of forests and streams. There he wandered around for a week, searching for fresh signs of his lost wild brother. He didn't find any. He killed his meat and traveled, traveling with the long, easy speed that animals in the wild have, one that never tires easily. He fished in the wide stream that emptied into the sea, and by this stream he killed a large black bear who was also fishing. The bear was a hard fight, and this fight raised the last remaining qualities of wildness that were still hidden in Buck. And 2 days later, when he returned to the spot where he had killed the bear, he found a dozen small dogs eating his kill. They ran quickly away as he surprised them, all except two, whom he killed with the same skill he used on the bear. His longing for blood became stronger than ever. He was a killer, a thing that hunted other animals, living on the things that lived. He lived alone and without help, using his strength and power, surviving in a hard and unfriendly environment where only the strong survived. Because of this, he had a great pride in himself, which showed itself in his physical body. It was found in all his movements, seen in the muscles themselves, spoken plainly as words in the way he carried himself, and made his beautiful fur coat, if anything, more beautiful. Except for the brown fur on his mouth and above his eyes, and for the spot of white hair that ran down the middle of his chest, he might well have been mistaken for a gigantic wolf, larger than the largest of wolves. From his St. Bernard father he had inherited size and weight, but it was his German shepherd mother who had given shape to his size and weight. His nose was a long wolf nose, except that it was larger than the nose of any wolf, and his head, somewhat wider, was the wolf head on a huge scale. His cleverness was wolf cleverness, and it was wild. His intelligence, shepherd intelligence, and St. Bernard. All this, plus an education gained in the wildest and hardest of schools, made him a horrible wild animal. He was as dangerous as those animals that lived in the wild, the ones that killed their food and lived on a straight meat diet. He was at the height of his life, in full flower, and it seemed that power spilled off him all along his body. When Thornton passed a caring hand along his back, it seemed that his hair snapped with hidden power and electricity. Every part, brain and body, was at the highest point, and between all these parts there was perfect balance and equality. To sights and sounds that required action, he responded with lightning speed. Quickly as a husky dog would jump to defend from attack or to attack, he could jump twice as quickly. He saw the movement or heard sound and responded in less time than another dog required. He saw, decided, and responded all at the same instant. His muscles, in which total power ran, snapped sharply into action as if they were made of steel springs. Life streamed through him in a splendid flood, glad and wildly, until it seemed that it would split him open and pour forth through the world in sheer joy. "Never was there such a dog," said John Thornton one day, as his partners watched Buck marching out of camp. "When he was made, he broke God's model for dogs," said Pete. "I think so myself," Hans agreed. They saw him marching out of camp, but they did not see the instant and terrible change which took place as soon as he was within the cover of the forest. Here, in secret, he no longer marched. At once he became a thing of the wild, moving along softly, like a cat, a passing shadow that appeared and disappeared among the other shadows. He knew how to take advantage of every cover, to crawl on his stomach like a snake, and to jump and strike like a snake. He could take a bird from its nest, kill a rabbit as it slept, and snap in midair at little squirrels who tried to run away a second too late. Fish, in open lakes and rivers, were not quick enough to escape him. He killed to eat, never because he was bored, and he liked to eat what he killed. So often there was a play in his actions. It was his delight to sneak upon squirrels, and when he all but had them, let them go, crying in fear to the treetops. As the fall of the year came on, the moose appeared in large numbers, moving slowly down to meet the winter in the lower and warmer valleys. Buck had already killed a half-grown baby moose that had wandered away too far from the safety of the others. But he wished for the fight of stronger and larger animals, and he came upon it one day as he neared the river. A band of about 20 moose had crossed over from beyond the hills of forests and streams, and top among them was a great male moose. He was in a bad temper, and standing over 6 feet tall from the ground was as great a fighter as Buck could ever wish for. Back and forth the moose tossed the horns on his head, which branched out to 14 points and measured almost 7 feet in width. His small eyes burned with a wild and bitter light, and the sight of Buck made him roar in warning and anger.